Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Davis, the Pod Medic, and it's great to have everybody joining us here today. We've got a great episode here for you. We're going to be looking back at the tornado in Joplin, and I think we've covered a little bit about that, but this is a little different perspective today, and I'm looking forward to getting into that with our special guest. Before we do that, though, of course, we can't get the rest of the podcast going without Sam Bradley in what, balmy Colorado?
I wouldn't go so far as to say balmy, but it was sunny, and it's interesting to me how wind makes all the snow go away. I don't know if it's related. Maybe Kyle can answer that for us. But it doesn't seem to be the temperature so much as the wind and all the snow that's on the ground, like, completely goes away. So today was a very spring-like day, and it was kind of nice being out in it. But, you know, you mentioned the fact we talked about Joplin at some point in time. But when I got to thinking about it, that was 3 years ago. I think that's the last time we interviewed Dr. Brian Trelke, he will be on as soon as I track him down and pin him down to a date, because I want to have a chat with him about this too. But I think it was that long ago, so it's been quite a while. And with the anniversary lurking, it's a good time to talk about that. And I think this is going to be a really interesting podcast. We also have Kyle, our meteorologist, on tonight, and Dr. Joe Hawley. Hi, Joe.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Pretty good.
And so, it is balmy here in Memphis.
It is. It's always balmy in Memphis, I think. That's why I live in Colorado. I know it's balmy.
78 today in Memphis.
Oh, wow. That's great. It was 50-something here, which for us is pretty warm. So, Kyle, speaking of the weather, you actually finished the X Games. You were doing those last week, so I hope that all went well. And you're chilling out now, but isn't there another winter storm coming through? Not so much here. We're kind of missing where I am, but I know it's hitting part of Colorado and going east. What's up with that?
Well, good evening, Sam, and everyone out there in the Disaster Podcast. Meteorologist Kyle Nelson here. Yes, Sam, you are correct. We did just wrap up X Games here in Aspen, Colorado. That went really well. And thankfully, we had a relatively quiet stretch of weather, both in Colorado and across the U.S. For about the last week or so, at least with regards to severe weather. We are in the midst of our next winter storm that's currently working its way on shore in the Pacific, as well as through the Rockies. And that's going to eventually move out onto the plains and into the Northeast here as the week goes on. On a bit of a timely but also unfortunate topic for the tornado piece we're talking about here today on the podcast, we actually just had a relatively small tornado outbreak across the southeastern part of the U.S., most notably just outside of the New Orleans area, where at least four tornadoes have been reported, dozens of injuries, but thankfully no fatalities being reported at this time. So we're transitioning back to an active weather pattern across the U.S.
Well, this isn't the first tornado outbreak we've had since the first of the year. We did lose some people on that first round, so that's a little scary. I kind of wonder what the rest of the year is going to bring. So I'll have to check in with BJ and see how things are down there in New Orleans.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, our thoughts go out to those folks there, because of course we can't forget the humanity behind these natural disasters that occur. It's one thing to look at them on Doppler weather radar or look at the pictures of the aftermath, but like we're going to hear today, the stories from the victims, I mean survivors of these disastrous events, really make all the difference and truly reveal the humanity behind these disasters.
And that is exactly what we're talking about tonight. But Joe, didn't you mention when the first tornado outbreak occurred that the USAR was actually on call, which is kind of unusual in how they did that, because it doesn't usually happen that way?
Well, that's correct, Sam. So this last outbreak of tornadoes that were down in the Florida Panhandle and southern Georgia was the first time that I can remember for a tornadic system, which is, Kyle obviously can talk to this much better than I can, but it's sort of known for its unpredictability, that they actually put USAR teams on standby and, you know, felt confident enough in their ability to predict a bad outbreak that, you know, they took that step. So I don't know if that means the prediction capability has come a long way or there was something special about that storm outbreak, but it was definitely a bit of an unusual occurrence for us.
It certainly is. And Kyle, you gave me the perfect segue to our guest tonight. And I found her through her author's newsletter. And, there's usually a lot of romance stuff and so forth. But I saw the book cover come up, and it says, Tornado Warning, The Extraordinary Women of Joplin. And, of course, immediately it slapped me right in the head and I go, whoa, wait a minute. I got to find out more about this. So I emailed Tamara right away, and Tamara Hartheiner. And having looked her up on Amazon, she's written a lot of books, so she does a lot of writing. But I was really impressed with this, and I wanted, as well, she had her own experience, not in Joplin, but in an adjacent city. So the first thing I want to do is get Tamara to introduce herself and tell us a little about her life.
Okay, well, hi. Thank you, Sam. I'm delighted to be able to talk with you guys. I have been writing books since I was in about the seventh grade. I didn't become I'm a full-time mother, but I didn't start publishing books till 2011, 2010, which is actually 2011 is the year that the Joplin tornado happened. So it has been a long time now, coming up on 6 years.
Yes, it has. So that was one of the, didn't you just put this book out, or was this just because of the anniversary you decided to put it out again?
The book, I put it out several years ago.
Okay.
Probably it came out in either 2012 or 2013. I can't remember. But the idea came to me, because the tornado had happened, and the idea came to me probably 4 months after the tornado that I could write a book to help memorialize what these people had been through, as well as to be a fundraiser, because it takes a decade or more for a city to rebuild after such devastation. But it still took another year or two before the book went to press.
Well, I love the fact that you're doing that and that you're still contributing to the recovery. The picture on the cover looks like a church, at least what's left of it. Is that
it
what I'm
was.
Seeing?
Yes, wow. It was. And everything from the book was donated. Somebody took that photograph and they donated it for the book. All of the women who had their interviews in there, they donated their time for the book. And it really came together quite nicely.
Now, you had to feel good about that. Well, I definitely want to talk more about the book, but tell us about your personal experience. Where were you? I know you said something about having your kids in the bathtub and all mm-hmm. of that. So where were you and what was your experience on that?
Well, I live in Bella Vista, Arkansas, which is right across the Missouri border. And Joplin is about 40 minutes away. And there's not really any big cities between Bella Vista and Joplin going up into Missouri. So we can head south into Fayetteville, which is a bigger city, or we can head north into Joplin. So when the tornado warnings came through, I had no idea that it was hitting any area besides my own. I was just concerned with my children and my family. And my husband at the time was actually deployed, and it was me with my three little ones. And so we went down to the basement, and I put the two boys in the bathtub. And my little baby, she was maybe 9 months old, I put her on her changing pad, and we just hunkered down in the bathroom and waited the storm out, waited out the tornado warning. And honestly, I thought that was safe enough. I thought that if something were to happen and a tornado hit our house, that us being there in the bathroom would keep us safe. But after I interviewed women and heard their stories, I realized that would not have kept us safe at all.
So, Joe, what's your take on that? You know better than any of us where the good place to be or not, because I guess there is a lot of conceptions about what's safe during a tornado. What's your thought on that?
Well, I think the short answer is there is no good answer. Obviously, wood frame structures like homes more toward the central area and more toward areas that have more walls around them and more support around them, like staircases and, things like that. You can get underneath the staircase, that sort of thing. But I think, if you've got a major tornado coming at your house, and without, you know, reinforced concrete and that sort of stuff, there's probably no place in that house that is guaranteed to be safe.
Well, on a USAR level, where people seem to most survive is when they've found some kind of void space. So I would think, as you suggested, maybe being under a stairwell or something that's sturdy might be your best bet, right?
I would agree with that, but I think that the challenge is that the void space often is you are lucky enough to be in a spot where a void space formed, as opposed to I went there specifically looking for a void space. Mm. I would still say that, you know, the heading to areas where the there's more structure around you is obviously a wise move as opposed to some, you know, more exposed part of the house. But I think it's just being aware that even in a bad tornado, even that area is not likely to be completely safe.
Well, Lightning Fingers' Kyle Nelson already found a nice little graphic on the best options for tornado safety in order. So he threw it up in our chat room, and I think that's something Jamie might be able to reference. So thank you for that, Kyle. So, Tamara, how close did the tornado actually come to you?
We did not get hit by a tornado in Bella Vista at all. And after, it must have been around 7 o'clock that the tornado warnings died down. And my neighbor across the street called me, and she had a twin sister in Joplin. And she told me, I need you to pray for my sister. She's a nurse at the hospital, and the whole hospital was destroyed. Mm. And that was kind of the first that I heard that something major was going on. And then it was all over the media outlets, and it was just shocking because those kinds of things. And I can't remember who I interviewed, but he talked about how everyone in our own city, we seem to think that we're safe, and those kinds of things happen to everyone else, but not to us. And to have it happen to Joplin was just kind of like, wow, it can actually happen.
And that's just, and we talked about that a lot, because we do a lot of talking about disaster preparedness in general. And I think that's, everybody has that problem. It happens to everybody else, but it's not going to happen to us. And then when it does, it's quite a shock, but I would think it certainly helps prepare you for the next one. And, you know, we talked a lot about New Orleans. We have some of our people down there. And, you know, they now are in the mindset that, oh, yes, it can happen. It happened once, and it can happen again. So they're going to be much more prepared for the next one. And, yeah, I remember the hospital in Joplin because our friend Dr. Brian was down there with his team, with the Missouri State Medical Team, disaster team, and we heard a lot about that. So, well, I'm glad that everything worked out for you guys and you were safe. So tell us a little bit about making the decision to write this book and how you decided who to interview and how you got a hold of these people and maybe some little snippets about some of their stories.
Sure. Well, it was an interesting concept that came to me one time when I was driving through Missouri. And when the incident first happened, when the tornado happened, the whole community in Northwest Arkansas, probably just like all the areas around Joplin, got together, and husbands and dads were devoting weekends to going and helping. And I couldn't go help. For one thing, I'm a 100-pound, 5'2" framed woman. For another, my husband was deployed. There was no way for me to physically up and leave and do something other than donate. And they started to say, we're getting so many diapers, don't send any more diapers, things like that.
So I didn't think there was such a thing as too many diapers. Yeah.
Right. And the thing I kept hearing them say on the radio over and over again was, you remember us now, you're caring about Joplin right now, but we're still going to need help in 6 months. We're still going to need help in 5 years. Don't forget us. And I was driving to a book signing in Kansas City, Missouri. And as I was driving through the Joplin area, I was listening to the radio stations through Joplin. And this was in September after the tornado. So it had been 4 months. And the newscaster was talking about the tornado and talking about how people were already forgetting because the next disaster comes along and it takes precedence. It takes priority. And it just naturally happens because there's always going to be another disaster. There's always going to be another cause, another need. And I was on my way to a book signing, and I just thought I could write their stories. And stories are forever. Once you put words down on paper, it's permanent. And people would never forget. And I was just so excited. It's a 3-hour drive from my house to Kansas City. So the whole drive there and the whole drive back, I was just brainstorming, what can I do? How can I get this going? And I had never tackled a nonfiction project. And I probably never will again. It was extremely more than I expected. But
it's a daunting task because, you have to find the people to interview, and you want a certain selection of stories, and it's a huge process. I mean, I've never written a book. I've done a number of articles with interviews, and even that is complex. But so how did you find these people?
Yeah, well, I divided the book up into three parts. And the first part, the foreword, is all of the technical stuff, like the recipe for the tornado, how this happened, how so many people could die in this day when we have warnings and we have shelters and we have all these things to keep something like that from happening. So that's the beginning part. That's the like technical manual of the tornado. And then the meat of the book is the interviews with the women. And I did not set out thinking, oh, I'm only going to interview women. This is just going to be about women. I started out interviewing anyone who would tell me their story. And what I found was most guys could tell me what was happening during the tornado. But when I would ask them, well, what were you doing that morning before the tornado? I got answers like, I think I was playing video games. It's like, I need a little bit more than that. So I ended up cutting it down. There were probably 13 interviews, and they were all women that were just really, really detailed. And the way I show what happened on that day is we start on Sunday morning, and I show each woman getting up, getting her breakfast, starting her Sunday morning, and then we go on to lunchtime, and we go on to afternoon. And I just wanted a window of that woman's day so that you felt like you knew her before we hit the tornado, before we hit the tragedy. And then it carries on to the day after and the week after. So you get a full glimpse of their life for a week, 24 hours, however long it is. And after I had interviewed and gotten all that story for 13 women, when I took it to my critique group and to my beta readers, they had a hard time differentiating between some of the women. And it was hard for me to cut them, but there were some women who were very similar. Either they were young moms with two kids, or they were an older lady with a dog, or it was a single mom with a cat. Some of them were very similar in their stories. So I had to make the decision to cut some of them that were too similar. And instead, those women, they have quotes at the beginnings of chapters so that they still got to be involved in the book, but they don't have a whole section that follows them. And then the last part of the book, the afterword, is all about tornado safety and disaster preparedness.
Yay.
So it talks about where you can go to be safe and what you need to have in your emergency preparedness bag for when disaster strikes and what needs to be in your safe room. So
we love you
on that. Yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah. So the first thing I did when I knew I was going to have a technical part, I contacted the meteorologist who was over it in Springfield, and he was extremely helpful. He sent me their whole report, their disaster report, and the meteorology report leading up to it, and the steps they took, because they had to issue a report after it happened. They had to explain their actions and what was their role in trying to let people know about the tornado. He sent me the whole thing, and I didn't understand half of it. So I had to really pull out my dictionary and start trying to make sense of the terms. And there is a glossary in the back of the book as well. There were a lot of things that I just didn't even know what it was.
Well, it's too bad we didn't know Kyle back then. He could have interpreted that for you.
Right, right. And I did contact several meteorologists. But here was where it got tricky, as they contradicted each other quite a bit. So one of them would tell me one thing, and I would go in and fix that. And then I would send it to another one, and they would go, no, that's wrong. And I'm like, what do you mean?
Well, meteorologists are much like the weather. They're just about as different as their predictions happen to be going from one to the other. So, you know, it's just, and their experiences were all different, I'm sure.
They
weren't in the same place. They didn't have the same experience. So I guess to some extent, Kyle is now typing in the chat room. I knew he would come up and say something because it's not an exact science. Would you agree with that, Kyle? Because I know you're dying out there to say something.
Well, absolutely, Sam. You bring up a great point where it is not an exact science. Even though there were fantastic, you know, forecasts in this outbreak was forecasted several days in advance, we still, even to this day here in 2017, just don't have the capability to predict where an individual tornado will occur at any given time. But we're narrowing down the areas, we're increasing our confidence as forecasters in, you know, where these types of storms will occur that are likely to produce tornadoes. And I'll post a link there in the chat room as well of the document that I think Tamara is referencing is called a service assessment from the National Weather Service, and this is done for very high impact events, including the Joplin, Missouri tornado back on May 22nd, 2011, and I'll share that link so you all can see that as well. So as she said, it talks about the roles of the different organizations involved, as well as the National Weather Service, talking with some of the survivors, as well as looking at how they can improve their services and communications going forward.
Wow.
That sounds exactly right.
That sounds awesome. And we love the fact, Jamie, I'm sure you're happy that there's a lot of, she actually put in some disaster preparedness material. That is really excellent because now the book, you know, besides having a compelling story, it serves a purpose. So we're very happy about that because we talked about that. What do you think, Jamie?
Well, I know we talk about it all the time and, you know, we in fact covered what you need to have in a response bag or a first aid kit for a disaster just a couple episodes ago. So, you know, it is something we come back to and revisit on a frequent basis. And I have to say, Tamara, I'm really excited to hear that you added this to your book, because I think it's important to, you know, you tell a compelling story. And then you also give them some useful information to maybe save a life sometime down the road. So that's awesome.
Right.
Yeah, for real. So Tamara, you can't tell us, read the whole book to us here, unfortunately, but we will all be reading it. Since you mentioned the weather part, I know Kyle will be reading it. Yeah, he'll send you his assessment. But, you know, one of the thoughts I had, Kyle, was in 6 years, hasn't the science become much better? I mean, we're talking 2011 here.
The science is continuing to improve. We are getting more, better data now with more instrumentation to observe the current state of the weather. We also have increased the capabilities of our numerical weather prediction or our weather models that we have, not only for the United States, but around the globe as well. So we're, again, being able to narrow down where these types of storms will occur, given the different ingredients in the atmosphere. But again, to predict an individual tornado or an individual damaging wind event, we're not quite there yet. But the biggest focus now is on communicating the hazard and communicating the likelihood that hazard will occur. And just to briefly get into this here, from the Joplin tornado, that was actually the impetus for the Weather Ready Nation initiative, as well as impact-based warnings. So before Joplin, and even on the day of Joplin, a tornado warning for an EF0, so a very small tornado, the smallest on the scale, all the way to an EF5, it was just a tornado warning. There's no way to differentiate those. But we've since, the National Weather Service has since added in verbiage and other things to better communicate the severity, the magnitude of the hazard for these very high-end events.
So, Joe, maybe that's, you know, I keep going back to thinking about how they had enough information that they put your USAR on call. So I'm kind of seeing that being more of a trend. Would you agree?
I do. I think it says a tremendous amount about the advancement of the science, as Kyle was mentioning, and the ability to, with much more confidence, be able to at least predict areas where events are likely to occur. You know, I don't know that we'll ever reach a point where we can say it's going to hit your house next week, but I do think that, you know, we've made tremendous strides in our ability to at least predict potential and put resources in place. So, you know, for what it's worth, based on Kyle's comments, I think that is probably a direct result of the amazing work on the part of the meteorology community to be able to push the science far enough to allow enough confidence for disaster managers to say we need to put resources in place because we got something coming.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, Tamara, what was one of your what is a compelling story that you remember from your interviews? Give us a taste of the kind of thing we'll see in your book.
Well, every time I went through my book and edited a draft, it moved me emotionally. So I connected with all the women in some way. And I didn't just want to show people who lost their homes and had a tragedy. I wanted to show how the whole city came together and pulled through to help. So some of the women, they didn't lose their homes, but they were out there helping people who did lose their homes, and they were sheltering families in their basements. But
wow.
One woman in particular, I really connected with her so much that she actually moved to Arkansas after their house was destroyed in the tornado. And we met up a couple of times, and I could just relate to her so much. Her husband is military, so she knows all the stuff that goes with that. And my husband was in the Army at the time, and her husband's Army bag, his bag of all his surplus and everything had survived the tornado, even though the house was destroyed. But when they went back to get it, it had been stolen, along with half of other belongings that did not get destroyed in the tornado. And she's a young mom with three small children. I could relate to her in so many ways. And listening to her story, I get emotional. Listen to her story as they were in their basement, and she is literally holding her children to her as the wind is sucking out windows and sucking things out of their laundry room.
Oh, my God.
It was amazing.
Well, I remember you telling me, and I can certainly relate to this, that it took you a long time probably to be able to read that without crying and to actually be able to write it. Some time had to pass so you could put yourself in kind of a neutral place. And I totally relate to that because my ability to write about Ground Zero, it was years. I would start to write something that I wanted to capture some of my thoughts, you know, so I had it for later, but I just never got too far. I can't do this. So I could totally appreciate the emotional impact this has for a writer when you're writing something that personal, or even, you know, even the people that you didn't know that you then found such synergy with. I totally appreciate where you were coming from. So you gonna write more disaster books, or are you just hoping you don't have to experience yet another one?
I learned a lot from it. It was a wonderful experience. It was a lot it was almost overwhelming, the amount of research and the amount of fact checking and everything that I needed to put into it. And I worried all the way through it that I wasn't going to do it justice, that I wasn't going to accomplish what I wanted. And it was extremely stressful. I would do it again.
I'm just thinking the fact that your interaction is just like what we do, what Joe does in USAR, what I do on DMAT. We can't save the world, but the interaction we have, even with just a few people, it enriches their lives because somebody cares and somebody's telling their story. So I think it was a really positive thing for a lot of people. What do you think, Joe?
Oh, I agree completely. I was actually just going to say a thank you to Tamara for the approach she took on this book. I think the idea of sort of making it very much about this is just a regular day, and then something happens, and your life is very different after that, and the profoundness, if that's a word, of the change
is now.
Life, well as the longevity of that change, I think gets lost in the frenzy of, you know, news media and the latest story and, you know, Trump tweeted something and whatever. So I just commend you for that approach, because I think you made the disaster very real and very personal. And I think that's really important for people to have the respect that they need to have for Mother Nature, and to take seriously things like preparedness and all those things that go along with that to try to keep yourself safe. So kudos and thank you for a great book.
Thank you.
Yeah, I can't wait to read the whole thing now.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to make sure we have links to this in the book in the show notes, as well as I'm going to put a link in there as well to your author page on Amazon. Tamara, I know you write a lot of books that are lighter fare in the fiction realm of things, and people should definitely check that out as well as check this book out. So we want to make sure that people know where to find you. Is there anywhere else that you can be found online? Do you have Twitter account or someplace on social media you'd like people to find and follow you?
I do. I'm on Twitter. It's just my first and last name, Tamara Heiner, and I have a Facebook page. I think it's author Tamara Hartheiner. Can't remember for sure. And I know that Tornado Warning is being made into an audiobook, so that will be available probably in the fall.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, we'll have to keep an eye out for that. Make sure you send us the link to that, and we'll I'll update the page.
Wow, that would be a really hard one to do an audiobook on.
Actually, my publisher, they sent me some of the people who were auditioning for the book, and they sent me two of them, and one of them I didn't feel like she captured the essence of the book, but the other one, when she was reading the section of the book, she almost had me in tears. And it's been years since I have read the book. I don't generally pick up my own books and reread them, so it was almost like fresh to me. And I was really very excited for how this audiobook is going to turn out.
And, of course, you're the one that would have the best sense of that, of course. Well, Jamie's an author as well, so he writes very different things, which you'll have to check out his stuff, too. Go ahead, Jamie.
Excellent.
Awesome.
We've got a bunch of authors here on the show, so that's kind of
fun. Yeah, we do.
So, Tamara, thank you so much. We'll make sure we have links to all that in the show notes for this episode at disasterpodcast.com. And thank you so much for sharing this story with us and giving us an opportunity to kind of pick your brain a little bit.
Thank you for letting me.
Kyle, where can folks find you?
Well, Jamie, folks can find me on all the social medias under the handle WX Kyle Nelson, as well as in the Disaster Podcast Facebook group.
And Joe, how about you?
Well, I'm around the web too. ParagonMedicalGroup.com on the Facebook page by the same handle, as well as the Disaster Podcast. So we look forward to hearing from folks.
And I do want to thank you again for all that Paragon does to support the Disaster Podcast as our sponsors. Without your support and resources, we couldn't do what we do here on the show each week. And we do appreciate your input, as always. And, I'm thinking of, the type of experiential training you do. It's learning from these types of situations from the people that responded firsthand and lived through it firsthand. So it's very similar, to some of the stories that Tamara told are the same types of things that you try to relate to the responders you train. So thank you very much for that.
Well, you're exactly right, Jamie. And that is exactly what brings it home to people, is you have to make it real and you have to make it personal.
Definitely. Sam, where can folks find you?
Well, in my office writing, hopefully. But on social media, under Sam Bradley, Sam Bradley 11, one of these days I'll get my website up and I'll be able to tell you about that. But most certainly on the Facebook page, Tamara, it would be great if you could join us on our Disaster Podcast Facebook page in case people have some questions for you. That may be very well
sure,
happen.
I'd love to.
That'd be awesome. And Jamie can tell you how to do that. And then certainly on the disasterpodcast.com website, which is another place where you can come up and tell us what you think about this conversation and give us some idea of what else you'd like us to talk about. Because even going into 4 years, we never seem to run out of things to talk about. So, but we want more.
And, of course, you can always find me under the handle PodMedic and most social media channels out there. And, of course, always on DisasterPodcast.com and on our Facebook group. So if you want to join our Facebook group, you can just check out Disaster Podcast. Just search for it in Facebook. It'll pop right to the top. Request to join, and one of us will bring you in right away. We aren't very selective. We just want to have that's how they make the group set up. So that's what we do. So we want to make sure that you get an opportunity to come in there. We have, I don't know, three or four hundred people in that group already, responders and people of all types and varieties, and it's a great way to interact and look at new episodes when they come out. So check them out over there. You know, Sam, I just think about, we talked to, you know, Dr. Brian Frahlke about this, and his response in Missouri to the Joplin disaster. And it just, you know, it kind of brings chills to mind to think about the types of things that Tamara described in her book.
Absolutely. And she's already in our Facebook group, so that's cool. But that was fast. Joe went in there and approved it right away. God, yeah. I mean, tornadoes to me are not something I have intimate familiarity with, even though I started out life in Michigan. And as a kid, you have a whole different concept of, wow, that's really cool, not understanding the true danger of it. But I this conversation was totally awesome. I mean, we had just the right people in here to talk about the different aspects of it. And I'm so happy that Tamara wrote this book, and I'm so happy I found her, and I'm glad. We'll keep her in our little circle. But you know, and to think about the weather implications of this and how the predictiveness, maybe I'll make up some words here, Joe, but it's the predictiveness of these events is getting better, and that's really a good thing to know. So, but, you know, it proves, just like every conversation we have, that disaster medicine is not our everyday medicine.